turn to Daniel. We're going to be looking at the end of Daniel chapter 10 and doing basically a thumbnail survey of chapter 11. If you're familiar with Daniel 11, you realize that it would take 70 weeks to go through Daniel 11. I will say up front that if you want a verse-by-verse explanation of Daniel 11 to understand the history that it foretells, because Daniel 11 goes from the construction of the Second Temple to the destruction of the Second Temple. So Second Temple Judaism, the time frame of the Second Temple, is completely explained and prophesied in Daniel chapter 11. And so if you want that history, read John Calvin's commentary. It's the best I have found on accurately giving a verse-by-verse explanation. But that's not what my goal is to do that. I'm just going to do a thumbnail overview of that chapter. And what we want to look at today is the three dimensions of providence. Now, we typically think in a two-dimensional world. We know that providence is from God, and that's the heavenly realm. We understand providence is dealing with all the earthly circumstances that we're dealing with. That's the earthly realm. So we have the heavenly realm of God's predestination and His purposes that are preordained before time. And then we have the working out of those preordained purposes and plans in history. But we're going to see there's a third dimension. And we're going to look at all three of the dimensions of providence this morning. And we're going to see that there's a heavenly dimension. Secondly, we'll see that there's this intermediate dimension, a dimension that we're, for the most part, unaware of and do not think about often. And third, we'll look at the earthly dimension where we stand. First of all, we think of the heavenly realm or the heavenly dimension of God's power over all earthly powers. And we have to recognize that all earthly powers, if that would be Nebuchadnezzar or Cyrus or the Persian Empire or the Grecian Empire or Alexander the Great, or if we're dealing even with our own time, Russia, China, America, all these powers that have real power, real influence, real ability to do things. All power is under God's power. That there's no earthly power down to the individual that is not under the control of God. God is in control of all kingdoms. He brings up a kingdom. He brings down a kingdom. They rise, they fall under His plans. Daniel 2:21 says, He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. Daniel 4 tells us in verse 34, At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me and blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom endures from one generation to another generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, and He does according to His will among the hosts of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can say to His hand or say to Him, What have you done? We know that even the sparrow, whatever power that a sparrow has, doesn't rise or fall outside of God's control. Now, there's a lot of power, I would say delegated power in the world. we may be even now in fear of our own country or our own power that is over us now. We may fear other powers. We may fear China. We may fear Russia. We may fear any other of these powers that have the ability to interfere in our lives. But we have to stop and go, all power is under God's power. And nothing can happen except God wills it. You see, it's God who rules those who rule over God's people. And the purpose of Daniel chapter 11 is not looking at every world power. You know, we're not talking about the Orient here, the ancient powers of the East, not even mentioned in Daniel 11. Is God not in control of the powers on the other side of the world? No, he's only dealing with the powers that will be over Israel. See, Israel is going to be subjugated into the hands of these foreign powers. They're still in this long captivity, the 70 week of being under the 70 years of Babylon wasn't going to end after the Babylonians were conquered by the Persians. They would continue to be under foreign power until the end of the destruction of the temple, until the king comes. But until then, they were under foreign power. And Daniel 11, in just a thumbnail sketch, talks about all these other powers over the power of Israel. The reign of Persia. The reign of Greece. And under the reign of Greece, you have the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. It talks about his first Egyptian campaign, then his second Egyptian campaign, then the persecution of Israel by Antiochus. All this is laid out, even the last several verses, the last nine verses of chapter 11 is dealing with the power, the rise, and the fall of Rome. You know, and if you look back through Daniel, it's kind of repetitive talking about these major world powers. Babylon, Persian, Greece, Rome, over and over and over, these are the world powers that it predicts and prophesies about. But what we need to realize that when this was written, basically after the Babylonians fell, we learn in Daniel chapter 11, verse 1, that he's consulting the king. And we learn that the Lord Jesus, in his pre-incarnate state, came to Daniel and gave him a history, a prehistory of what's going to happen. And it's amazing that the fine detail in which the history is foretold. I mean, we try to prophesy or predict the future, and we're trying to, you know, act like Chinese fortune cookies, something vague, something, well, that probably could be predicted. But that's not what's going on in chapter 11. There are such fine details that you'd have to be God to know this. In fact, critics of Daniel will always go, this book must have been written after these events took place, because there's no way he could have known to what level these things would have took place. We learn in verse 2 of chapter 11 that there would be four more kings in Persia. He says, now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will rise in Persia. And the fourth shall be richer than them all by his strength. Through his riches he shall stir up against the realm of Greece. You know who that fourth king was? Xerxes. You know who he was? He is the king that was around that Mordecai and Haman. Remember the story? That's Xerxes. Well, he was prophesied many years before he came about by Daniel. And this king, he would be, unlike the other kings, he would gather up his wealth, his riches. He would flaunt his riches. And that would stir up the kings of Greece. When they saw how much wealth that he had, it would provoke them. It says, stir up all against the realm of Greece. It says that Xerxes built the biggest army. And because of the great army that and the wealth that he accumulated, it stirred up Greece to fight against him. Then we see the rise of Alexander the Great in verse 3. Then a mighty king shall arise who shall rule with dominion and do according to his will. And not only talks about how he would come into power quickly, it predicted that he would fall quickly. Because his kingdom was, we know in the history books that after he died, at the age of what, 32? I mean, he was at the height of his power. He had conquered everything. He basically began to cry because there was nowhere else to conquer. But he's still young. 32, he dies. He was in Babylon. You know, he only had 2 children, but both of them are little kids. One by his wife, Monica, another one by a mistress. 2 little kids. But they're too young, and maybe the power would go to him. But look, we know in the history books that none of his power went to any of his descendants. It says in verse 3, then a mighty king shall rise who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he has risen, his kingdom shall be broken up. Right in the middle of conquering the world, it would be broken up into 4 chunks or 4 pieces. And divided the 4 winds of heaven. So after he died, the kingdom spread out in 4 divisions. His 4 different generals fought each other in the civil wars. Took many years to settle who's going to take what. It goes on to say, but not among his prosperity. Posterity means his kids wouldn't take the throne. It says, nor according to his dominion which he had ruled. So the kingdom was broken up into 4 smaller powers, 1 to the north, 1 to the south, 1 to the east, and 1 to the west. It says, for his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. And then verses 5 through 20, we're not going to go through it. Again, I recommend John Calvin's history of this. There, it goes back and forth wars between the north and the south. Then we have in verse 21, the rise of Antiochus Epiphanes. It says, in his place shall rise a vile person to whom they will not give honor or royalty. See, Antiochus wasn't in line to be a king. He wasn't. His father wasn't king. His great-grandfather wasn't a king. He's not in the line. It was like his second uncle. But nevertheless, he came into power, and it tells us how he did. He took the kingdom by flattery and deceit. It says, but he shall come in peacefully and seize the kingdom by intrigue. That is, he didn't have to kill someone. He snuck into the position. Then it talks about, in 31, verse 31, about how Antiochus would come into the holies of holies, which is something he was not allowed to do, and he would profane the holies of holies. There was this ongoing war between Antiochus and Egypt. And one time he had come down to Egypt to fight, and he didn't win. So on his way back, he was so mad that he sacked Israel and went in there and went into the temple. And it predicted this in verse 31. And all forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices, and the place that will be the abomination of desolation. And then, if you read the story of Judas Maccabeus, that was predicted in verses 32 through 35. Look at verse 32. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery, but the people who know their God shall be strong. These are the true Christians, true believers, that is, and carry out great exploits. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall abide with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding shall fall, but it shall for the appointed time to refine them, to purify them, and to make them white until the time of the end. So it speaks about this little resistance of Judas Maccabeus. It says, okay, they're going to have a little bit of victory. There'll be a little help. But in the end, they're going to be conquered. And this is for the judgment of the sins of Israel. However, for those who have understanding, it's for their purification. It's for their sanctification. So here we see that God is predicting the future down to the last little detail. And I can tell you, He knows tomorrow. He knows what's going to happen 2 weeks from now, if there is a 2 weeks from now. He knows what's going to happen the next election cycle. He's already wrote it down. He's already pre-planned it. Thus, we can trust God, though we don't always trust our earthly leaders. Isaiah 45 tells us, "Thus says the Lord to His anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have grasp to the subdue the nations before him and to loose the belts of the kings, to open doors before the gates may not be closed. I will go before you and level the exalted places. I will break in pieces the doors of bronze and cut through the bars of iron. I will give you the treasures of darkness and the hands of secret places, that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel." I'm telling you beforehand of these events, so when they happen, you'll know it is I that have done them. "I am the Lord, and there is no other besides me, and there is no God. I equip you, though you do not know me, that people may know from the rising of the sun from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is no other. I am light and create darkness. I make well-being and create calamity. I am the Lord who does these things." Let's take a moment to say in our hearts, everything that is done well. Do you believe that? Now, I know if God gave you the keys or let you have the control panel, you say, "Come up here and take over," I know what I would be doing. I'd be eliminating people quickly. You're gone, not you. See you later. There's going to be a hole opening up in the ground and you're going to fall in it tomorrow. That's how I would have run this place. And you would too. You know, God is opening up holes. He's just patient. And His plan is so glorious that in the end, when we get back, we're going to go, "Wow, He entrapped the wicked in their own schemes." And the way He's doing it is going to be so more glorious, and it's going to bring Him so much more glory than if we were there just randomly pushing buttons according to our weak perspectives, our sometimes unjust feelings, our emotional responses. And if we were there, we would probably make a havoc of things. So, though we may not trust our leaders, we trust our leader. We rest and submit to this high level of providence. That's our comfort. That's our security. Even when His plans bring calamity to us individually. It's one thing for calamity to hit our nations or our nation that we love. It's another thing when it begins to trickle down into our very lives and affect us. Maybe even financially, or affect us in our health. And we begin to not trust God. I'm all for taking precautions because of COVID-19. It's amazing how people just, they love their life so much. They've gone to panic mode. But we do it for other things. We panic, right? We panic and we lose our rest. We lose our sleep because we don't trust the one who is in control. We're not relaxed knowing that, hey, Jesus was able to sleep in a boat when the waves are crashing into the boat. His disciples are going mad. Do you not care that we're perishing? And he just, what, are you waking me up for this? You have little faith? Do you not know who's in the boat with you? Do you not know who's in the boat with you? Do you not know who's controlling the boat? I don't know what I would do without this doctrine. Not in the world that we live in. I would just be panic mode. I would be jumping ship. But we don't have to jump ship. Spurgeon is right when he says, when you go through a trial, the sovereignty of God is the pillow upon which you lay your head. John Flavel said, providence is wiser than you. And you may be confident it has suited all things better to your eternal good than you could do if you had been left to your own option. So the control panel, back away from it. I mean, you can't control it anyway. It's just in your mind. But back away from it. And say, God, I'm going to trust your plan. You know the end before the beginning. See, that means he's not reactionary. We're reactionary. We see, we don't know the end. We only know the now. And thus, we're making all of our decisions of what should happen based upon the present. And because of this, I would do this. And we're the chess players, but God is the programmer. And he's pre-programmed everything perfectly. I don't know how he could have done it. For everything to be for his glory, everything for his glory, the Bible says, even the wrath of man shall praise me, and the rest I'll put a belt around, I'll restrain, I'll keep it from happening. There's not one rogue sin that God's didn't ordain for his own glory and purposes. There's not one little thing outside of his control that doesn't fit his overall purposes for his own glory. And if there was, he would say, it was not going to happen. So there's nothing that has happened that didn't need to happen for God's perfect plan to come to fruition. And it's glorious. And God hasn't told us everything about the plan. He just told us that he's the one planning it, or who has done the planning. And that is enough. That's the realm. That's the heavenly realm of divine providence. It's the realm of everything's been predetermined in heaven according to the good pleasure of God's will. I love that realm. Well, then there's another realm that we want to talk about, kind of jumping back to chapter 10. It's a realm that you and I don't give much attention to on a regular basis. It's this intermediate realm between heaven and earth. Look at verse 13 of chapter 10. Then the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the king of Persia. Then he said, do you not know why I have come to you? But now I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except Michael. This is amazing. Your prince. What does all that mean? Well, these are talking about angels. What is a prince? But a son of a monarch. One who has power, delegated power. And you see, God made the angels with a delegation of authority. And we learn in the New Testament that there's ranks of angels. There's the archangel. There's archangels. There's angels underneath that. There's angels underneath that. There is a chain of command like any military. All under the angel of the Lord, the Son of God. There's this chain of command of angels. And they've been assigned to earthly powers. You see, the devil is the prince of the power of the air. Remember when the devil told Jesus, when he took him up to the pinnacle and looked over all the nations? He says, all the glory of these nations, all these nations are mine. I can give them to whomever I will. They're mine. They're under my thumb. They're under my control. I'm the prince of the power of the air. I am the prince of darkness. And all the children of darkness are underneath my authority. I am the commander. When I say walk, they walk. When I say jump, they jump. And they're all following after the course of this world. They're all doing as I command. I'm giving the marching orders, and the whole world is following me because all the world is enslaved into captivity of the prince of darkness. Y'all believe that? I don't know if we do believe it, but it's true. The whole world's under the dominion of Satan. All the nations of the world at one time was underneath Satan's control. Now think about that. When Israel went into captivity, they were leaving the little area that God controlled, the land of safety. Kind of like the church. This is, you know, if you get put outside the church, you're given over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. Israel was that little dominion where I don't think Satan controlled. That little land, that was the safe space. But when they went into exile, they were going into the territory of Satan. They were going out and brought underneath, under the control of, maybe it's Nebuchadnezzar, but it was someone above Nebuchadnezzar. Maybe it was the Persians, but it would be a demonic force over the Persians. You see, each national power is under the leadership of a fallen angel who's under the leadership of Satan himself. This is what it's talking about. Here's the prince of Persia. And we know it's talking about angels because it talks about Michael, who's Daniel's prince. Michael, the angel who came by the Lord, came by the Lord's side and helped the Lord fight against the prince of Persia. And went to go help him fight against the prince of Greece. You see, there's an unseen battle between good and evil in the angelic realm all around us, and we're just oblivious to it. We think what's going on at Washington, D.C. is where the battle is. There's a battle that is more important behind that scenes that's controlling Washington, D.C. Colossians 1:16 says, "For by him all things were created in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions." These are the realms of the angels. Thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. Now, let's step back and say, what are the purpose of angels? Why did God create the angels to begin with? Well, they're called ministering spirits. They're go-betweens. They're intermediate spirits. They're gods in heaven. He created the earth. They're messengers of the covenant of works. They're to exercise God's justice. If you break the law, the angels are going to be the ones that execute judgment. They're the police officers that come and arrest you and take you into prison. Or if you keep the law, they're the ones that keep you from calamity happening. So if you're a sinless person, the angels are to keep you from calamity from even happening. Now, this is the amazing thing about humanity. Angels are more immortal. They don't die, at least they can't die by falling off a cliff because they're spiritual beings. You and I, however, were made a little lower than the angels. Angels can't die like we can die, but we're able to die. And even Adam and Eve, in a sinless state, because of their mortal flesh, they could die. Potentially, they could die. But it's the wages of sin that is death. So if you're innocent, but you're capable of dying, how is God going to keep you from dying? Well, Psalm 91 tells us how. He created the angels to serve you so that you don't accidentally stump your toe. Remember that? You could accidentally stump your toe. Oh, it hurt your toe? Well, the angels would keep that from happening if you're sinless. I'm talking about Adam and Eve before the fall. They would never hurt their toe. That would be great. Or if you accidentally fall off the cliff, they would be there to catch you. Because you can't die if you're sinless. And the angels are there to keep the law. Keep you safe. That's why the devil told Jesus, jump off this cliff. God will send the angels to protect you. That's true. But Jesus says, you're not to tempt the Lord your God. See, the angels are made to protect and guard humans. But also, they're made to execute the law for those who've sinned. Who took Adam and Eve out of the garden once they sinned? It was the angels. Escorted them out, and they guarded the entrance with flaming swords. Who carried out the 10 plagues on Egypt? The angels. When David numbered the people, and he asked God to fall into the hands of God, who killed the 70,000 people? One angel. Until God said, that's enough. Stay your hand. In the last judgment, who's coming to get the non-elect and throw them into the lake of fire? The angels. In the sanctuary, you have the Ark of the Covenant. Why do you think there's angels over the mercy seat? Because that's where judgment takes place. Angels carry out God's wrath. I can only imagine it was angels having to flog Jesus on the cross. Whatever that may have looked like. Psalm 103:20 says, bless the Lord, O you, his angels, you mighty ones who do his word. Obey the voice of his word. That's what angels do. They execute God's justice and his word, either protecting the righteous or punishing the wicked. You see, with that in mind, angels, though they're created higher than you, they're immortal, and they have way more intelligence and strength. In fact, there's ranks of angels, with the devil being the highest, and even Michael, who's one of the highest of the good angels, dare not confront the devil on his own authority, you know, own power. The devil was the highest of them all. Don't tell him what kind of power he has. But the least angel is way more glorious than the greatest man who ever lived. Now, think about this. Who is the image bearers of God? Who is the crown of creation? It's man. And God made the angels secondary, even though they're more glorious and more powerful. And I think that was the very thing that caused Satan to fall. Satan was made with creation. In fact, all the angels are part of the created order. They're not eternal beings. They weren't always here. They were created. And here they're created for the purpose of man. They're ministering spirits. They're made for us. And the devil had to think to himself, I got to serve those two people? I could crush them with my fingers? And I have to serve them? I have to make sure they don't stump their little toe? You got to be kidding me. Look at me. Now, the devil knew he couldn't take down God. He wasn't even trying to war with God. He's too smart. I mean, you fight with God because you and I, we aren't too bright. But not Satan. See, he didn't want to take down God. He just wanted to put man underneath him. He wanted to be in the place of God, above. See, it was God, man, animals. And I don't know if the angels are underneath the animals or between the animals and man, but he, for sure, the angels are underneath man in the pecking order. And that was too humiliating for Satan and a third of the angels. So what they did, they reversed the order. They went in and tempted Adam and Eve and made them fall, and it brought all humanity underneath the fallen angels. Glorious news, Christ came to put things back right. Christ didn't do this in his deity. He came as a man. And as a human, frail man, he conquered Satan. I don't realize if we realize, how does a little weak man who's mortal conquer the great dragon? How could that happen? I don't think we realize, you know, well, Jesus is God, but he didn't go, well, if I was Jesus and I was God, I would just snap my finger, make the devil disappear. But that's not what he did. He conquered in his humanity. 40 days and 40 nights, Satan himself came and gave everything he had to destroy Adam. Destroy the second Adam, Jesus. He resisted Satan in his humanity. Resisted and resisted. But now the Bible says that he has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God with angels, authorities, and powers having been subjected to him. Hebrews 1:13, and which of the angels has he ever said, set at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool? You see, this is what Jesus did. And this is why he says, if I cast out demons, then I'm going to draw all men to myself. And there's another thing he said right before, after he rose from the dead and appeared to his disciples, he looked to them all and he said something that was the most glorious thing that's been told. Up till this time in human history, Israel was to stay exclusively in that little bubble. It was a judgment that dispersed them. They were not to be dispersed into the enemy's territory. They weren't to go into and break down the gates of hell. They were to stay put and protected. And there was no gospel to the nations. Nowhere did God say, go to the world and preach. Evangelize the Moabites and the Philistines and the Egyptians, the Babylonians. No. Don't marry them and stay away from them. Build a wall around your cities. Keep isolated. Keep distinct. Unless you are destroyed. Hunker down was the Old Testament message. But now Jesus says, now that he has put Satan underneath his foot and he's crushed the serpent's head, he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Now I tell you, go into all the world, into all the nations, into every nation. I don't care which nation it is. All the demons that control the nations. If it's the prince of Persia or the prince of China or the prince of this nation or the prince of America. Whatever demonic control is over these nations, you go, because I've already conquered the head. Go, preach. And I'm going to be with you to the end of the age. We don't have to be scared of the prince of Persia or the prince of China or the prince of any other country. We have the prince, the King of Kings, who's conquered. And he's told us to go. He's told us that the gates of hell shall not prevail. You see, we still need to be concerned, though, however, because the devil is like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Don't underestimate that there is a power out there, or powers in the plural, that are after your destruction. The devil is seeking to wreak havoc upon the world. He is. However, we also need to be thankful that the elect angels are guarding us. You say, you're saying you believe in guardian angels? Yes, I do. Most definitely. You know who the guardian angel was for Daniel? Michael. Well, that would have... But you know, it bears a reason. Who was the most important person alive during the life of Daniel? Daniel! It only makes sense that God would assign His chief angel to guard Daniel. You know, I was thinking, like, well, what angel do I have? The least one is better than none. You know, when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and he gets up the next day, walks out, and the king goes, what happened? He goes, God sent an angel to shut the lion's mouth. I assume that's Michael. Michael went down with Daniel and just shut the jaws of those lions and kept them from acting. You remember the story of Elisha? Where his servant is worried because they're surrounded by this great army. And Elisha says, Lord, open up his eyes. He says, oh Lord, please open the eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of the horses and chariots of fire around Elisha. You know, that's why you can go into the gates of hell. You don't have to fear demons. I'm not suggesting you go pick fights with them or challenging them. But you don't have to fear the enemy. And I think this is what it means when he says there are more with us than are with them. Remember in 2 Kings 19:35, the Lord, that night the angel of the Lord went out and struck down 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. And remember in Acts chapter 5, so that's just Old Testament stuff. Well, Acts chapter 5, it says, but during the night an angel of the Lord opened the prison doors and brought Peter, the other disciples, out. No, we don't want to worship the angels. They're just created beings. In fact, the angels cover their heads and worship God as a holy, holies of holy. But there is this intermediate dimension of divine providence. It's not just God in heaven and us on earth. There is this cosmic battle taking place all around us. And I believe that battle is doing more to influence this world than we could imagine. Now, this brings me to my last point. And you'll be glad to know this, that it's only take me about 2 minutes to get through it. Look at verse 12 of chapter 11, of chapter 10. Then he said to me, fear not, Daniel. Far from the first day, that you set your heart to understand and humble yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I've come because of your words. Now think about this for a moment. Knowing what you know about the angelic realm and the divine providence of God, who is Daniel in this scheme? Why would God even listen to Daniel? What would cause the angel of the Lord, who is the Son of God, to leave off this battle? Now, if you're a great general, the captain of the Lord's army, which is the Son of God, why would you're fighting by yourself, no one's to help you, eventually Michael comes and helps you, but you're in this battle alone. You're fighting the prince of Persia. Then you know after you defeat the prince of Persia, you're going to have to go and do battle with the prince of Greece. And we know that's what happened. Persians was over Israel first, and after that would be Greece. So it's almost like The angel of the Lord is keeping the kings and leaders of Persia from doing more harm than they would do naturally. He's keeping the lion's mouth shut. He's keeping these kings from not going too far in their abuse of God's people. But why would the angel of the Lord break away from the front lines, doing battle, important battle? This is way important stuff. Why would he stop? And it take him 2 weeks, and he's trying to get to Daniel. But for 2 weeks, he's got to fight his way to get to Daniel because he's got to fight the prince of Persia to get to Daniel. Why would he do that? I mean, do you realize this is a 2 week delay in the campaign, in this battle? He's interrupting this cosmic warfare. Now, let me ask you this. You prayed, and God hasn't answered you. So you're thinking God doesn't hear you. Well, Daniel prayed, and 2 weeks later, nothing. But when he finally does get there, he says, I heard you day one. I heard you day one. But it's not as easy as you think to get this prayer answered. Now, I know you and I, we've prayed a lot of prayers here lately. I have never been more concerned, honestly speaking, about the church, about our country, than I am this very day. It's led me to pray with heartbrokenness, sincerity, fervency, repetitiveness, consistency. And it doesn't seem God is hearing me. Yet. We just don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Do we? But here's my last point. This is it. The third dimension is where one little saint, one little housewife, one weak new believer, maybe you. Though that all things are providentially planned and nothing's going to change that. But realize that providence includes this cosmic battle, right? He's ordained the cosmic battle and he's ordained Daniel to pray. So his providence includes your and I's prayer, which your and I prayer affects the cosmic battle. You see, now that Christ is king over the prince of Persia, the prince of Greece, and the prince of America, the prince of China, the prince of Russia, that your prayers can control these cosmic battles. How can that be? Because you're one of God's dear children. And you have been made joint heirs with Christ, and now you rule and reign with Him. And the Bible tells us we shall judge angels on that day. You don't know what kind of battle you're in. But I'm going to close by saying, keep praying. Keep the battle up. Don't grow weary in well-doing. You just don't know what God may do. He may sustain our country. He may restrain. And we deserve, let me just put it this way. We deserve the full wrath of God. We deserve to be burned up. He deserves to put a big hole in America and we just fall right into it. That's what we deserve. But for our children's sake, God may push back these princes of darkness for another generation or two. I don't want to be like Hezekiah. As long as it doesn't happen in my day, it's okay. I want to go down fighting. Either the Lord comes back now, which is to be the most glorious thing, or I want to go down praying because I believe prayer truly changes things from a cosmic level. Let's pray. Dear Lord,